GM, GM friends, you are now listening to the DGen Aussie Apes, bringing you another weekly sesh on all things crypto and NFTs. Let's go. It's the money. GM, GM fam, what's happening, guys?
What's going on?
Nothing much, GM. Guys, for everyone listening today, super excited to have another DGen in the house. Phil Rejo, man, you know, creative manager, graphic designer, Take 3. I mean, we've just been chatting off air. There's so many things you've been doing in Web3, man. So thank you so much for making the time to make it to DGen HQ. When people first come to DGen HQ, but it's been a blast since you got here, man. I mean, we've been doing foosball, Mario Kart, chatting Web3, chatting all things crypto and life. So yeah, man, if we should have been recording from the beginning.
Would have had like 3 hours worth of content.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm glad we showed Luca P, who's the boss in foosball. Yeah. That was
it was all rigged. The field's rigged. The ball's rigged.
Well, it's funny to just give a visual for everyone. We were outside just playing a bit of foosball, and me and Sidorides, .eth, we were teamed together, and we had like the bottom had sort of fallen on our side, so there was a bit of a block. So every time we shot a goal, it bounced back. Luca P had witnessed this from the beginning and didn't say anything.
Yeah. What's your point?
Sportsmanship.
You would have done the same thing, mate.
Absolutely. Nah, man. I'm a Web3 guy, bro. It's all GM, GM friends, and it's all about community. So.
Mate, look, I seen the advantage and I took it. I didn't say nothing about it.
Anyways, I'm just saying for all our guests, I mean, I'm sure they can pick who they're going to believe here, you know, who's got the track record. But like I said, man, thanks so much for coming out to DGen HQ, man. It's always nice to sit and get some different perspectives on other people in Web3, because there's so much to, I guess, Web3, whether you're in memes or some of the stuff you were doing in the last bull run, which was super innovative and super cool. But I'd love to ask Phil, man, I mean, where did it all start? Where did the penny drop? You know, how'd you get into crypto?
It's one of those, that's such a good question, because I feel like you can, like, how far back do you want to go?
Mm.
You know what I mean? So I can go forever, because, like, you can't really join the dots of things until you become, I guess, till you get to the point where you're like, okay, everything makes sense on how I got here. So let's go back into actual crypto, right? So I guess at the start of when was the last bull run? 2017?
Yeah, end of 2017, 2018, yeah.
Yeah, so around that time I was working as a senior graphic designer within the fitness space. I worked in the fitness space for just over 10 years now. And I remember working at this supplement company, and everyone on, I think it was Facebook, was talking about Bitcoin. That's when I first heard about Bitcoin. And I was at the point in my life where I was like, I got to start investing in something, like putting my money towards something that's going to grow so I can come back to it and there's more of it. I needed to get into that. So at the time, I was learning about stocks and I was just dibble-dabbling, like learning about companies, what makes stocks go up and down, learning about markets. Not coming from like a financial background, it's hard to get your head around how markets work and up and down and the sentiments and all these types of things. So I was learning about the stock market back in 2017, 2018, dibble-dabbling, heard about Bitcoin, said to myself, I'm going to open a Bitcoin like account, whatever that means, and I'm going to start investing in it. I didn't even know what I was doing. I was like, I'm going to open up an account. Am I investing in Bitcoin or am I buying Bitcoin? Like back then, I didn't even know what I was doing. So I actually opened up a CoinSpot account in 2017, and I got the welcome to CoinSpot email, and I never invested. I left it. And that was, I guess, one of my biggest regrets is not like investing since 2017. Fast forward 2021 at the start, I knew a little bit more about Bitcoin. I've been investing in stocks since then. I said, I'm going to get into crypto. So I started investing in Coin and Ethereum at the start of 2021, which feels, I guess, for me, it doesn't feel like it was that long ago. Anyway, so for like the next maybe 5-6 months, I was learning about crypto, this dollar costing averaging in $100. And then I'd heard about NFTs, I think on a Gary Vee podcast. He kind of mentioned it, was talking about it. I didn't know anything about it. Kind of spoke about how you can do it with ticketing and how it's related to art. I was like, at some point I need to learn more about this. So that was when I heard about NFTs, mid-2021. A few months, maybe 2 months after that, my brother, my younger brother, who'd already been in crypto in the Web3 space for a bit, messaged me one morning and was like, oh bro, I think I'm going to be sick. And being the older brother, like throughout the years, if my brother ever messaged me that, I get worried. Like, what's wrong? Is he okay? Is he hungover? Has he been taking something? So I rang him up straight away. I was like, what's up? Are you okay? Like, what's happening? And he goes, bro, I just sold an NFT for 30 ETH. And at the time, I didn't know about NFTs. I'd heard about them. And I just did the math in my head. And I was like, that's a lot of fucking money. And I freaked out. So I literally that day went to his house and was like, bro, today we're going to sit down. You're going to teach me about NFTs. And then he started teaching me about it. I started learning more. I literally went down that rabbit hole. I said, you know what? I need to do my hours. I need to learn about this space. And I guess what initially got me was my brother making a bag, right? But what really got me into it was like, I learned that it was basically, at the time, it was the crossroads between technology and art. And being a creative, that's when I was like, oh, okay, now like I'm really interested in this. So yeah, went down the rabbit hole, started watching as much YouTube content as I could. I remember just stumbling upon Giancarlo's YouTube channel, Giancarlo Buys Tokens. Really, really good information because he's very, very unbiased for the most part. I started watching a whole bunch of his videos, NFT Nate, watching his content and just absorbing as much as I could and learning. And there was heaps to learn because I had a Web 2 mind. Mm. I spent years in, you know, companies that were building their brand on social media, e-com, very Web 2. So I came into it with that mindset and there was a lot to learn. And I'm still learning a lot until now.
It's really hard because I get, and you get yourself, and we've all had it, people wanting to learn about NFTs. And where do you sort of start? Everyone's journey is so like individualistic where it needs that penny to drop. You have to do your time. You have to research. Like it could be a gamer realizing that, you know, hold on, there's a secondary market that I can sell these in-game assets. Or an artist putting his artwork on, you know, these marketplaces and selling those as well, having royalties built in. I mean, just the smart contracts alone. And it's like when these pennies start to hit, I mean, selling an NFT for 30 ETH at the time, you know, when ETH was rocketing, I mean, that's a mind overload. How did you find, because you've sold a few yourself, the disconnect between the dollar value and the actual ETH value itself? Because it's one thing looking at something as, oh, it's only 0.5 ETH.
Mm.
Well, hold on a second, there's a dollar value to that ETH. That for me personally was very hard to sort of disconnect. And I feel it did myself a disservice when, you know, you're sitting in a meme run. And how did you find that sort of disconnect from a dollar value into switching your mind now into a currency of, well, I work in ETH now?
Now, that's a good question. And like you said, it's a question that a lot of people have. It's an instance where a lot of people like come across where it's like, you have to make that disconnect. Because if you look at the ETH as dollars, that's when you, I guess, it becomes more emotional now. Because we've all grown up with money is this value. You know, you use it to buy things, goods and services, and it has a lot of value, like emotional value to people. For me, it was just someone tweeted once on the timeline, one ETH is always going to equal one ETH. And for me, I just always come back to that. And that is what makes like me disconnect that fiat value into ETH. And the second thing is, so the first thing is like one ETH is always going to equal one ETH. The second thing is that you should never sell your valuable assets. So if you got ETH, you should never sell it. So there should be never a reason why you kind of do the conversion of ETH to fiat. Does that make sense?
So you're saying people should only deposit like into crypto to play around with and see how it goes? Like what about as kind of an investment vehicle? Like don't you need to realize those gains sooner or later? Like what's your kind of perspective there? Or are you just happy to let your holdings and your NFTs just ride and wherever ETH goes is wherever it goes?
I definitely think taking profit is something you should be doing. It's something I learned to do or that I will do in the next bull run. And I would basically, instead of selling ETH into fiat, I would sell it into stables and hold that. As far as pros and cons, to me, there's too many cons of actually selling it for fiat.
And in terms of some of those valuable assets, you're a doodle holder. Yep. That's right. So you're wearing the doodle jumper before. What defines a valuable asset? Why is a doodle valuable and maybe another NFT isn't? And how do you make that justification between kind of a blue chip? Because some people would only consider Yuga assets like punks and apes kind of blue chips, whereas other people kind of consider it all NFT collections above one ETH, right? It's a different definition, but what's your definition of valuable in this space, you know?
I think the first thing I want to mention as well is that I feel like the term blue chip definitely gets thrown around way too much within the NFT space.
Mm.
You know, back in the stock market, like blue chips are like companies that have been around for like 10, 15, 20 years that have held their value, that are producing value. They've got P&L assets on their balance sheet that they're holding and they're profitable. Whereas you got like NFTs that have been around for like what feels like 20 minutes. And we're using that term. It could be right, could be wrong, but I feel like obviously you've got your NFTs that are holding, you know, that are top tier. We'll call them top tier, right?
Yeah.
Mm. And for me, what I learned quickly in this space is that, because when I came into the space, I was like, how do you even differentiate between a good project and how do you know what's going to go up? There's so many projects out there. So I kind of took what I learned previously about assets is to do your due diligence and learn as much about a project as you can. And I just started building a checklist of things that I wanted to look at if I was going to buy into a project. Are the found, you know, obviously the basics. Are the founders doxed? What have they done? What's the art like? What do they plan to do? What's the community like? And you just build that checklist.
Don't make a decision based on influencers.
Yeah, that's the worst
thing you can do.
And I learned that very quickly because
Everyone learns that.
I was buying into projects at the start because they were being shilled on that Mark Cuban Instagram page, the NFT one. Did you hear about that?
Oh, no, so Mark Cuban, I think he owns the Instagram handle for @NFT, or like just that's really? What it is. So that's got a ton of followers. That. I don't know if he owns it on any other handles, like on Twitter or anything, but it's, I remember that in particular, like that was, and look, even someone as smart as Mark Cuban got rugged multiple times, even in DeFi, so.
What was the protocol that
Iron, on? I think it was Iron, no, Iron, might've been Iron Finance. I'm not too sure. I might have to do a fact check while we're on the podcast.
That sounds like a rug already.
I think he lost 10 million or something. Well, look, for that, that's like pocket change for someone who's a billionaire, right? Mm. But still, just goes to show that you can be very educated in the space. You can have a lot of Web 2 experience, but you step into Web 3 and you're a complete beginner.
That's
right?
Emotion. Emotion gets them
absolutely
the worst of you, you know, greed and like people like Mark Cuban who controls so much money, has so much money, still he's gonna get taken over by greed. But look, obviously he's pretty good when it comes to risk. He only put 10 million and he's probably worth, I don't know, 4 or 5 billion.
Yeah, 5 billion, I think. Like I was saying, I came into the space with the Web2 mindset.
Yeah.
So I saw, you know, projects getting shilled on his Instagram page, the NFT one. I was like, well, it's got to be good if they're like pushing it on Instagram.
Do you remember the projects?
Oh, gee, I think one of them was called MetaMinds or something.
MetaMinds.
Yeah, you find it's like buried in the abyss now. There was MetaMinds.
Did it push EtherRocks? It was so many.
There was another one, something like, oh, this is how my Web2 mind worked at the time.
Yeah.
It was coming up to October, which was coming up to Halloween. And I saw on his page like a horror, spooky kind of project getting promoted. I was like, oh, well, this is going to pump because Halloween's coming up. Like, that was my theory.
The own research.
So I bought it, and you know, all went to zero. So that was like a big learning curve for me.
Just before people say that's like silly to go off something like that, you don't understand how many times, especially in meme coins, it could be some random narrative that's happening in the world, and the meme coin just pumps.
Well, what's really funny is a meme coin I recently saw that popped off is eggs. Because you know how everyone's talking about inflation and the price of eggs are going up and it's expensive?
Yeah,
eggs is just a meme coin. And then what happens? Wheat, bread, like all these other food coins start popping up. Yeah, exactly. So it's crazy. Like, especially when it comes to memes, it's still for a lot of people outside of the space. Like, you know, I've shown a lot of people like a picture of a bored ape and said to them, how much do you think it's worth? And I've gotten anywhere from $3 to a few hundred dollars. And people like, wait, it's more than $1,000. And I'm like, it's a lot more than $1,000. So it really is a new paradigm in how you think about it. But I did want to ask you, Phil, from a kind of design background, what do you think of the quality of, you know, some of the PFP projects that are out there? Like if you look at even the Bored Ape, the actual IPFS data for Bored Ape Yacht Club is actually frozen on chain and it's only 720 pixels by 720. So the actual team has released a high quality version, but that's not actually what's stored or linked like on chain basically, right?
Yep. Like, well, I look at it from, and this might, like I said, might be my Web2 brain kicking in, but I look at projects art as far as what has the more potential or the most potential for being, I guess, a brand that a broad demographic would appeal to. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's like, and this is why I love Doodles art, because I look at Doodles and think, this looks like the type of art that my two-year-old would dig and my nan would dig. It's like The Simpsons. Everybody loves The Simpsons. A five-year-old can watch The Simpsons and a 70-year-old can watch The Simpsons and get something from it and have a laugh.
What is their ultimate goal? Are they supposed to be making a series?
So their ultimate goal is basically to become a entertainment brand. What that means, don't know yet, but obviously they've got, you know, they're hiring people within the music industry. So I'm definitely thinking that they're going to go down that path as well. That's I look at the art as what could be branded and have broad appeal.
Yep.
That's not to say that the other, you know, art projects like Yuga can't be successful, because they've definitely got their niche, their market, you know what I mean? Mm. But like, would my one-year-old like the Mutant Ape art? Probably not.
Find it a bit scary, eh?
Yeah, you know what I mean? So you have to keep in mind, like I would look at Azuki and go, yeah, that's cool art, but is that really going to be something that could be a massive brand that could rake in millions of dollars in revenue? Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't think so. But then you look at Dragon Ball Z, and that's like a massive franchise that makes so much. Like, and Azuki, I feel like, is kind of like on that on that level as far as the art.
I'm excited next bull run, see how it's going to.
Oh, absolutely. I just think it's a matter of time, like you said. The more that normies come to the space, obviously that's how we get mass adoption. But I feel like it's just a matter of time because people just need to hear or get that validation from other people around them that this is cool or this is the in thing, and then they'll get in.
Yeah.
For example, like I've owned my doodle for, I think like a year now.
Yeah.
And my wife has known this and she's like, yeah, whatever. It's just a cartoon kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then every now and again, I'd show her, you know, the marketing they'd put out or the videos they'd put out or the announcements they'd make. And she was like, yeah, cool. And she started warming up to it. Mm. And then I showed her, I can't remember what it was. I think it was like a promo video. And you know, the doodles had like this cool soundtrack and like cool animation. And I told her that they'd brought on Pharrell as one of their brand officers or something. And then she was kind of like, oh, do you think you can get me a doodle? And I was like, that's all it takes, right? Like, it's for someone to be around it enough to get that the social validation that it's cool.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, they're interested in it now. You know what I mean?
For sure. And I think that's what's going to happen is that sooner or later, like that network effect is going to happen.
Yeah.
And then everyone is like, oh, I know John owns a mutant. I want to learn about it. What can I get? You know what I mean? How do I invest? And I think it's really interesting as well with a lot of NFT collections. I'll focus on Yuga specifically. There's actually 165,000 different NFTs in the Yuga ecosystem. So 100,000 plots of land, you know, 10,000 apes, 20,000 mutants. You got the sewer pass now as well. So when they did the airdrop for the sewer pass, the dogs as well. And that's just specifically within like the Bored Ape kind of ecosystem, right? Like they've got CryptoPunks, MeBits. Like there are a lot of ways to get hands-on exposure into NFTs. But with the sewer pass, which was a free mint for the mutants and for the apes, total ecosystem grew by 40%, like new users coming into the space. So I consider that a kind of massive win because now people who are never going to own like a Yuga NFT now own one. So I see that's the path of how adoption is going. And then obviously with the sewer pass as well, you had to play the game Dookie Dash. You had like people 30s and 40s, married, had kids, said, here kids, go play this game, you know, like you can earn some money from it. So it's really interesting to kind of see that cultural shift take place. And I think, you know, apes, mutants and doodles, these kind of NFTs are really going to be at the forefront of culture in the next 5 years or so.
Absolutely.
For sure. How did you go about the whitelist grind during the peak of the 2021 bull market? You had a really pretty creative approach in order to kind of get your foot in the door. Do you want to walk the audience through what you did?
Absolutely. So basically, when I first got into the space through my brother, I was like, cool, there's, you know, you can make money here, but also it's cool community stuff and it's art and it's blockchain and it's emerging tech and I want to get into this. I basically bought into a few random projects as I learned. And then I think I had like 3 ETH to play with. And Jungle Freaks had just come out or minted. And it was like gaining popularity, gaining traction like crazy. And the price was going up. And I said, you know what? It's going to keep going up. I'm going to buy in. And I ended up buying 2 of their tokens at 1.5 ETH each. And spent my whole 3 ETH. And that went up, I think, to just under 2 ETH each. And I was getting like offers and stuff. I was like, oh my God, like, I'm a trading genius. Like, look at this, man. I bought into this project. I know what I'm doing. Oh, yeah. And I had like the, you know, euphoric feeling. And then I think 2 weeks after owning it, that's when the FUD came out about the previous art that the owner or the
art. So what did they actually have? They had like the Nazi.
They had. So the artist had actually in his past career had worked at Hustler magazine. Yes. And he did comics, cartoons in the magazine. And they were the cartoons were making fun of racism, it was very political.
This was early, like in the
60s, 70s, 80s. Yeah, I remember these magazines.
Because it was mainstream. It's
Hustler, man.
Yeah, Hustler. Yep. He would poke fun at everyone.
Yeah.
No holds barred. But obviously people picked the racist cartoons and posted those and they went viral. And that was enough to kind of bring the project down.
Of course, yeah.
And the floor price tumbled.
So there were no actual, because I remember seeing headlines about it at the time, there were no actual traits included in the collection
that's up for debate because they had like military caps, I think.
That SS resembled like the German.
Resembled,
I think they had the SS.
Something like that. But whether they did that on purpose or if it was just a coincidence, people use that. That was enough ammo to kind of rip it up.
Oh, once they get it, that's it.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There's no
difference. It never goes away.
Especially today.
So the price tumbled. I sold, you know, and lost and only had a little bit of ETH left. And there was no option to leave the market and not be in the space anymore. I was like, nah, I'm like, I'm here. I want to learn more. And I just sat on the sidelines.
Yep.
And this is towards the end of 2021. Mechaverse.
How long did you last on the sideline?
Oh, so this is where it gets interesting. So I sat there maybe a few months, but like Mechaverse had come out in the meantime. So they obviously did like a raffle, allow list of some type. I entered the raffle, didn't get it. But I watched that pre-reveal shoot up to like, I think it was like 7 ETH.
Or 7 ETH,
something like that.
Or just under 10.
Something crazy.
Something crazy.
And I was like, and then after it revealed, the price dropped.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, like I saw all this hype around a project. It minted out, pre-reveal, the floor price soared, and then it dumped afterwards. And there were people, there were influencers, I don't know who on Twitter, that were saying, I saw this coming. You guys should know better. If you've been in the space long enough, this is what happens for an overly hyped project. And that stuck with me. I was like, okay, so overly hyped projects pre-reveal get a high floor price and then they dump because people realize they don't have rares or whatever, or they want to get out. And I said to myself, if I can get whitelisted to a high profile project, mint, and then sell it pre-reveal, I'm bound to make something, right? So I started, I also noticed that, you know, how do you get whitelisted? I noticed a lot of people were making fan art to get whitelisted. And I said, I can make fan art. I have a creative background. I'm a graphic designer. So I started making fan art. Wasn't really getting anyone's attention. So I really started pushing the envelope and making art that would, the whole goal was to grab the founder's attention or the mod's attention. So I would make 3D art. I would literally get a domain name that was related to the project and make a fan page and post all my art on this fan page. So for example, Hatebeast was my first kind of like project that I got whitelisted for. And for them, so obviously it was based on Bored Apes, but it was very fashion conscious and it was 3D art. So I made custom 3D Air Force Ones in the same thematics as their NFTs, if that makes sense. And yeah. I made red ones, black ones, green ones, yellow ones. One of their NFTs was a dude smoking weed or something, or had like a weed theme. So I made green Air Force Ones with weed all over it and it had the guy on it. And I made wallpapers and I must have made like, honestly.
Where'd
like,
you promote it? On their Discord or Twitter?
So I made like, must have made like 20 or 30, right?
Yeah.
But I would put it on their Discord. I was pumping it.
Oh, okay.
And then some dude would be like, oh, stop spamming all this stuff. So I made a website called hatebeastfam.com.
Is it still up?
Oh, no. The website is still...
You rugged it.
Yeah. That's nah, it. I think it's defunct now, but...
Is it .com or .?
Hatebeast fan. Yeah, that's it. The first one. Yeah, it's not up anymore.
Okay.
I still got it on my in my archive that I can show it to you. But basically, and then I started pumping the URL of that fan page on their Twitter. Every time they posted, spam it. And on the page, it had Hatebeast Fam, and it would have like a little blurb. This is a fan page I made. This is my Discord handle, and the goal is to get whitelisted through my artwork. And I kept pumping it. Anyways, woke up one day, sitting on the couch with my wife and my son, and I was on the Discord on my phone, and I noticed that my name had changed color, and I got allow listed for Hatebeast, and I was pumped. I was jumping up and
best
down.
Feeling.
On the couch. Oh, I lost it. Because I was like, if this is Mechaverse all over again, I could make like 5, 6, 7 ETH. And then I did that calculation. I go, that's a lot of money, man. Like for me, that was heaps. So I got allow listed. I sold it pre-reveal. The funny thing is, man, it went up to 9 ETH. But then
pre-reveal?
Yeah, pre-reveal. Went up to 9. Wow. And then there was they did a spaces. They were going to talk about some stuff, the founders. I go, cool. I want to have a shower. I reckon they're going to announce something during the spaces that's going to pump it up even higher. When I get out of the shower, I'll sell it. Jumped in the shower, it was at 9 ETH. Came out of the shower, it dropped down to 7 ETH. I was like, what happened? I went online and that gamer influencer from FaZe Banks had FUDded it on his Instagram stories during this Twitter spaces when I was in the shower and it dropped down.
It's wow. Crazy.
Right?
That it's fast.
Ridiculous.
How long was your shower, just to put it in context with it?
Like, you know, it must have been a 5-10 minute shower. Mm.
Yeah.
I'm in there thinking, yes, I've just made all this money. I'm going to sell this thing. But either way.
What was ETH at the time?
Oh, I think it was like 3 or 4 grand.
So you lost 8 grand by taking a shower.
Yeah. It's crazy. Expensive. When you put it like
that.
You
put in that context.
Yeah. I just want to put in the context for the audience.
Never showering talking again.
Was yeah. Good shampoo at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Brother, what am I going to wash my eyebrows?
He's just straight out. I'm full of hair, bro.
So it dropped down to 7. I waited a bit. I think it crept back up to like 7.5 and I sold it. With that strategy, I was like, I'm going to do this for as many projects as I can. So I built a lot of websites. I created a lot of fan art. I bought multiple URL domain names that you know, relayed back to the project. And I did that with Invisible Friends. I did it with Trillionaire Thugs. They were the three main ones. And there was like a few smaller ones as well. And look, they weren't always, it was hit and miss. So I would spend hours sometimes pumping out like fan art and making a custom website, and I wouldn't get whitelisted. But the times that I did, I feel like I made up for all that time.
Yeah, it definitely would.
Made up for it. You know what I mean? So I was talking about the 3 ETH I lost with Jungle Freaks, but then fast forward 2 months and I made 7.5 ETH off Hatebeast. So I was like, okay, I'm sticking around. I want to play this game. I've got a nice little strategy. And that's kind of like.
Is that all you're focusing on at the moment? Like NFTs, no meme coins, or it's just, or have you dabbled in meme coins at all?
Not at all. Apparently, you guys have an amazing strategy. That's what John tells me. So I'm definitely down to learn more about
this. Yeah, we're definitely degens. Yeah, that's for sure.
Change your life.
Teach me the ways. Yeah, man. Next bull run, man.
And
next
more liquidity. Run. The thing with the NFTs, it's so much scarcity. It's like 10,000 is the average collection. Yeah.
Mm.
So if it's not there, if the price isn't there, you can't sell. There's no liquidity.
Well, what's interesting is, and just bringing this up because it's kind of relevant as well, with the Blur liquidity that's recently happened, like, you know, as some of the audience who may or may not know, basically OpenSea, one of the biggest NFT marketplaces, in order to compete with Blur, one of the new kids on the block, has basically reduced its fees to zero and its royalties down to 0.5% minimum, right? So what you've got now is where there would have only been, say, for example, you know, one mutant selling every hour or so, you've now got anywhere from 30 to 50, you know, constantly selling. You've got higher offers because of the new bid strategy from Blur. You've got an insane amount of volume. So wanted to direct it to you as well, Phil. Like, are you keeping on top of this kind of marketplace drama? Do you have any comments?
That's, I guess, a lot of that I didn't really learn about all that fees and like, I understand there was royalties with OpenSea.
Mm.
But as soon as Blur came out, look, I jumped on the interface and I got confused and I kind of shied away from it. So I really wasn't up to date and I didn't really have my finger on the pulse when it came to that. But all I know was there was some crazy bidding system they have in place. And because they went to zero royalties, OpenSea kind of followed suit.
Mm.
And the last thing, so I don't know much about it. Like, I haven't had my finger on the pulse, like I said. But I do know that yesterday I was online and apparently these people like making bids on collections and then going to bed and waking up and then realize they bought like 20 moonbirds or something.
Yeah.
And people like Franklin, like just doing crazy amounts of like buying and selling the same mutant, or like that Mackie brother guy, apparently he's like doing some crazy wash trading where he's pumping up the volume because he's buying and selling the same mutant to himself.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Wouldn't it just start being like wash trading because there's no fees?
Yeah, a lot of it is. So you've seen a volume of a lot of projects and this is introducing a new threat into the space because a lot of projects which previously wouldn't have been able to kind of pay and bribe their way to a higher volume.
Yeah.
I can now create a fake collection if I wanted to and just pump a lot of volume into it and it's costing me next to nothing, right? Mm. Because, you know, OpenSea isn't even taking a cut and the royalties come back to me. So we're going to see new levels of sophisticated scams with projects which have massive volumes.
Do you think they'll change again back to fees? I think that I feel like they're going to have to.
It's a tough one. Like they've OpenSea's, you know, been fumbling the bag, as we've said before. You know, like they've been making some pretty bad choices for the past 6 to 12 months. It kind of started with LooksRare, you know, which was more community driven, and since then they've just refused to kind of innovate and adapt. You know what I mean? So we'll see how it goes. But these marketplace walls are getting pretty nasty. You know, like behind the scenes.
Really?
So, yeah, it is. It's, well, there's a lot of money at stake. I think OpenSea raised at a $14 billion valuation last year. So, and Blur's now at $2 billion valuation, like based on the token. So yeah, it's just interesting to see. It's
ridiculous money.
Oh, exactly. And you know, if there is volume, you know, even if it's only 0.5%, that's still, you know, if you're getting 50 to 100 like trades for an NFT collection per hour, right? That's still some capital coming back into you. So let's see how long it is. Let's see how long the Blur people farm their token, basically. So they're creating these wash trades or buying and selling between each other in order to kind of earn more of these Blur tokens that come along. So, yeah, it's pretty complicated to keep up with, Phil. I don't blame you for not understanding it, because people, they do some crazy stuff to harvest losses on transaction fees and just to kind of farm these airdrops. So, yeah, it's interesting.
It's possible. People are always going to try to do it.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, and
sorry, explain to someone like me, how do projects make, if they're not making any royalties, does that mean they're forced to look for different ways of creating revenue for themselves?
Exactly. So a lot of projects are considering alternate revenue streams, and you know, only really the big projects which have raised from VC. So I think your Yuga Labs, your Doodles, you know, which have raised tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, can actually survive. So a lot of other project creators that were earning 10% royalties now. And if the, you know, retail user is given the option between, you know, paying $1,000 in royalty or paying, you know, $50 in royalties, obviously they're just going to choose the cheapest option, right? They want to maximize their profit. If they're selling out of the project, then they're no longer interested. They don't care about any kind of perks or membership. So it's been something that's been plaguing the NFT space and causing a lot of heated discussion in Twitter spaces for about 6 months. And yeah, it's just really heating up. Now that OpenSea has done this, it's kind of declared war, right? So everyone's kind of picking a side between OpenSea or Blur, which is the new kid on the block. But people have a lot of issues with OpenSea. They call it Broken Sea. Yeah, that's the common thing. But yeah, does that kind of answer your question on the kind of royalties front?
Yeah, absolutely. And would that, I guess, is it a possibility that projects are now forced to I guess, have their own marketplace?
It is, but it's also difficult for, like, I don't see every project having its own marketplace in the future, right? There might have to be some kind of new, you know, token upgrade or some kind of new, like, wrapped token, basically, which forces royalties. Because basically OpenSea kind of said to some projects, you can't list on Blur, right? Like, you have to use our interface and you have to set our royalty and it'll be barred from other kind of marketplaces. But then Blur basically went and still managed to find a way around it using OpenSea's contract. So they were kind of, you know, used the back door and they still managed to get around the royalty and bypass that. So it's really interesting to see. And it's, look, you know, NFTs saw a bit of a pump in the past few months, but this could, you know, lead to a lot of volatility and opportunity if you're playing it right. But in general, it's led to a lot of liquidity. Like if you were to check your Mutant, Shaheen, you'd see that, you know, usually you'd have an offer maybe 5% below the floor price. Now it's like 1 or 2%, you know, so there's a crazy lot more volatility. Yeah. And you've probably, if you were to sell it now, you know, you wouldn't have lost that 2.5% from OpenSea, right? You now get to keep that for yourself and your royalty. Well, it's also drastically reduced if you don't want to pay that. So crazy, crazy exciting times. And I love the fact that even in the midst of a bear market, as we say, you know, there's still people who are building and addressing these challenges. So the next bull run is going to look very different to the one that we saw last run, but it's still going to have a lot of the same core tenets that we've all experienced.
Do you think the next bull run for the NFT space will be similar to the last one? Or what do you think will be different? Do you think my strategy that I had in place would work again?
We'll be using Blur.
Yeah.
That'll be the difference.
I think, I definitely think, like, when there's demand, because as you mentioned before, there's no demand right now. People aren't grinding for whitelist. If anything, they're struggling, right? Mm. Like, there was a bit of an allow list. We had NFT Nate on the podcast and he was talking about there being somewhat of an application process. And if it's an anime collection, you actually have to fill out an application form and say, why do you deserve to mint this project? What's your favorite anime? Like, and it's kind of crazy to make people jump through that hoops to purchase your product, right? But it was working. That was the meta at the time. Whether or not that's held up, that's a different story. But I think we'll definitely see similar trends, but it will just be with new projects. Because once again, as someone who's been in from 2017, we saw the ICO mania come along, right? And a lot of people bought these tokens and thought, oh, it's going to pump in the next run. But realistically, it was a new suite of, like, you know, coins that had gone live, like your Solanas, like your Avalanche, you know, a lot of new tokens that ended up reaching all-time highs. And a lot of those tokens aren't going to see all-time highs in the next run. So I think some people need to learn to let go of their bag bias, basically just leave their NFTs in the past, because there will be a new opportunity. It could be something completely different. Like my first NFT was a CryptoKitty back in 2017. And I remember, you know, playing around with it and just thought, okay, this is kind of fun. It's dumb, but whatever. I don't even know what happened to the thing. But when CryptoPunks came along, I was like, I just kind of faded it. You know what I mean? And if you asked me in 2017, 2018, that NFTs would have called this massive spike and some of the biggest brands in the world were using it, I would have said you're insane, right? But here we are, you know what I mean? So might not even be NFTs in the next run that will go crazy, you know? So
could be NFT music, it could be...
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not a JPEG NFT. It could be really, yeah, like something, you know?
Especially with like Hollywood now. I don't know. I feel like it's dead. Hollywood's kind of died away. There's not many movies that come out. Even the music industry, like with the Spotify coming out, and they're not getting rewarded.
The artists aren't getting rewarded, So it could be music, it could be video, it could be some new format like we haven't could be 3D assets, like 3D models. Like, you don't really know what could take off in the next run.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I feel like Hollywood, like, no one goes to the movies these days. Like, when was
it's all boring.
Yeah, like...
Too woke.
Netflix is there and, like, home theaters are affordable, so people have big screens at home and, you know,
but the storyline, it's always the same storyline. Yeah. Like, you watch movies from the 90s and 2000s and they were edgy. Now you can't say this, you can't say that, you always have to...
Well, that's where, you know, you can let it to the NFT creators, you know, like, they have no boundaries and if people like something, they're going to support it, right? Yeah. So with Spotify, for example, I don't know what the rate is, but you get paid a few cents for 1,000 streams, right? So you need to be hitting tens, if not hundreds of millions, to actually make like a decent income from Spotify, right? But you know, when it comes to NFTs, it's like, cool, you can create something now and people will support you and send you like $100 in ETH, you know, isn't the same as like spending $100. Like, when's the last time you bought a CD or a vinyl or anything, right? As opposed to when's the last time you spent $100 on an NFT to support an artist? So I think we'll see a really interesting shift in that way too.
Yeah, the
so.
Big thing is no middleman. That's going to be the big thing.
Well, the marketplaces are kind of a middleman, but you need, like, you kind of need a marketplace to sell.
Yeah, but it's the fees aren't what your manager's going to take or your producer.
That's right. Exactly. That's right. It's not 40%. It's not a 30%.
Yeah.
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 They do the worst deals for these people, these artists.
No, I think it's important just to stay active within the space, because we might not be able to predict the future, but if you're active, you can at least catch trends and things like
especially
that.
Especially with AI now.
All the AI all that.
Just makes so much sense.
But, you know, I've said it for a lot of time, there's so much money to be made in crypto, and it's picking a niche or picking something, sticking to it like you did with the fan art to get whitelisted. You know, that's really innovative. That's thinking outside the square. So for everyone listening, don't take it all on. Oh, I'm a leverage and I'm memes and I'm layer ones or roll ups, or just pick something you like within Web3. Start learning about it and then try to spot, you know, a weakness that you can take advantage of to get that sort of edge. So I really love, like, I've had so many people on the podcast and, you know, no one's been as edgy as that to really think outside the square with what you've done. So you deserve all those big wins. I think that's super, super cool. Phil, generally before we wrap it up, man, we always ask the same question. Mental health, give us some tips, some tricks that you do. Oh, it's a hard market, man.
You're going to wrap it up now? I'm just getting started. Oh, yeah. Mental health. Man, I'm big on mental health tips. Okay.
Cold showers.
Yeah.
Cold showers.
Not during Hape Beast Twitter spaces, though.
No, definitely not.
No.
AMAs.
You'll lose $8,000, bro.
Cost you $8,000.
I think there's one big thing is to be kind to yourself and kind of monitor the way that you talk to yourself. I think naturally, on behalf of myself, if I do something like I walk and I drop my phone, oh, you idiot, get up, bro, what's wrong with you? Like, I'll speak to myself like, oh, bro, you know better than that. Oh, you dumb cunt, what did you do that for? The way you speak to yourself is important, because if I spoke like that to John or to my wife, like, you wouldn't want to hang out with me anymore. My wife wouldn't want to talk to me. Like, people, if you spoke to your mum, she'd be upset at you.
Well, you create your reality.
So. Right? So we shouldn't talk to ourselves like that. So if you're ever in a situation where you find yourself putting yourself down in your head, just catch yourself and make sure that you talk nice to yourself. Make a mistake, hey, it's all good, bro. These things happen all the time. Let's move on, learn from it. If it happens again, it's all good. Drop your phone, that's right. Everyone drops their phone, whatever. You know what I mean? But don't talk to yourself, don't put yourself down in your head. Don't call yourself names. And it happens. And people think, oh, no, I don't. But then if you catch yourself, kind of...
Should be too hard on yourself.
Yeah, that's right. We naturally always think that the worst case scenario is going to happen, right? Going for a job interview, I'm not going to get it. And you sit there and you think the worst case scenario. And it's common. We fear that, you know, we always want to protect ourselves from something, from harm or from the worst case happening. So what I do to myself is I make a promise where every amount of time I spend thinking about the worst case scenario, whether it's a minute, half an hour or a day thinking the worst case scenario is going to happen, I promise myself that I'm going to spend the equal amount of time fantasizing that the best case scenario could happen. You know what I mean? So, and I promise myself that. And I really urge, you know, listeners to do that as well. And we do it all the time. Naturally, we think, okay, I'm going for a job interview tomorrow. I'm probably not going to get it. I don't think I'm good enough. They probably look at my resume and laugh, or I'm not going to cut it. And if you spend 10 minutes thinking negative about it, promise yourself, okay, now I'm going to spend 10 minutes thinking that the best case scenario is going to happen.
Yeah.
They're going to love me. My resume is more than enough. They're going to pay me more than what I'm expecting. I'm going to get the job straight away. And everything's going to be sweet. Because, yeah, I think a lot of time we just think the worst case scenario.
Create anxiety. You start creating anxiety.
Yeah, you create anxiety. You create things in your head that don't even exist.
Of course.
So, and it's a nice feeling to think about the best case scenario happening. So,
for sure. I love that advice.
Yeah, I think that's really important, especially how you talk to yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's really, really important. And guys, you know, that's a whole bit of alpha. I mean, people will pay to hear that stuff. You know what I mean? So
I'll send you the invoice, brother.
Mate, you know, send it straight to Luca P's email address. I'll give you all the correspondence when we finish up here. But guys, I mean, you know, we're the DJ Aussie Apes. Thank you, Phil, for so much for coming on. We'll put all the socials up, guys. Make sure you follow, and, you know, we'll definitely be catching up and jumping back on the mic together, because I know you're doing a lot with Take 3 at the moment, and we definitely go down that rabbit hole in the next time. But thank you once again, man, for coming on out. And guys, we're the DJ Aussie Apes. Make sure you like, subscribe, listen. Luca P, Sidorides. I mean, you know the drill, guys.